Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, February 10th, 2017. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And everything sucks.
Yep.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
That's all we have to say.
It's been our update. Okay, so Rachel, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the actual traitor?
I want to start with this fucking ad.
the untucked shirt ad?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm so mad. I know this is not what you want to hear from me, and we'll get into all the juicy, horrific nightmare that we're living in. But let's start light, because it's not light. Actually, it makes me fucking crazy. We've started kind of watching MSNBC.
We're slowly working our way back into it.
And fuck, it's brutal.
Except for Chris Matthews. I can't.
I never watched that guy, though. I can't stand him. So there's this commercial for Untuck It? I don't fucking know.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's this, like, I don't know, youngish, middle-aged, like 35, 45, somewhere in that range, white bearded dude walking down the street. And he's like, you know, there's a problem that faces all men. And it's that you just can't find a shirt that looks good untucked. So it became my passion. And it wasn't easy, but it's what I did. And like, he made a shirt where you just cut off the wingy things that you tuck in normally so that the wingy things aren't there anymore. And then now you have a shirt that you don't have to tuck in that looks good untucked.
Yeah.
This is the great problem of American men. And only with his ingenuity and passion and drive was he able to fucking solve it. This is the great problem of American men. Finding a shirt that looks good, not tucked in.
Mm.
It's the personification. It's the perfect, perfect example of male privilege. Fuck everything else that's going on in the world. You know what's really the problem, guys? Fucking shirts don't look good tucked in. I don't know. I mean, I really feel like I need to pool my resources and my ingenuity and my passion and my money and a bunch of talent to figure out how to cut the wingy things off of fucking dress shirts so they look good untucked. That is the greatest problem facing white dudes, is the wingy things on shirts. It's so maddening, considering everything we're about to talk about. That was like, just, that's your biggest problem. That's the problem that you decided to face. And it's such a serious commercial.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like jokey.
No,
he's
no.
very serious about this.
I thought he was going to talk about prostate problems or erectile dysfunction.
Oh, and the next commercial's for Cialis, of course, because white men have other problems, I guess.
I don't think that's limited to white men.
No, right, of course not. But, you know, like, are there ever black dudes in those commercials?
Once in a while, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't watch commercials. I hate being advertised to.
But I literally think the last one I saw was a black dude, and he was, like, playing a saxophone.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Anyway, that's my little advertising bit. I just couldn't even possibly. I was like, okay. Like, I'm, like, getting ready to cry about five things that are happening right now, and this dude's just like, you know what the real problem in the world is?
That really sets
fucking
you off.
Fucking untucked shirts. And I'm like, fuck you. Seriously? Oh, my God. Like, just make the commercial be like, hey, if you don't like tucking your shirt and I, like, cut the wingy things off, so buy it. Like, great. Like, yeah, advertise that because people probably like that. But,
no,
like,
the struggle is real, Rachel.
The struggle and the passion and ingenuity of his life to cut the wingy things off of the bottom of shirts, because that's the greatest problem that men face, is like, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Fucking deflating.
Listen, do like Bernie Sanders says, okay? Put yourself in our shoes.
It's a serious thing.
Do Chris Arnade says, okay? Understand our plight.
That's the greatest
problem that you don't have that problem, do you? No. So you don't understand,
Rachel.
You could never understand our struggle.
Because you have
with our shirts
the wingy things at the bottom of your shirts. I just... Like, do you know what my life looks like?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea the terror that I face daily? But you know.
Yeah, but you don't have the wingy things on your shirt sticking out.
I don't have the wingy things on the bottom of my shirt sticking out. At least there's
that. Making you look like a goddamn slob. Not even getting a second look when you wolf whistle at the girl walking by.
I catcalled her, shirt. But I'm pretty fucking sure it was the wingy things on my shirt that made her not blow me immediately.
No, exactly.
I mean, but he fixed it. Like, he literally solved male problems.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, and then Cialis did the rest. So we're good. You guys are fine.
It's the 1-2 punch.
Anyway.
This is on MSNBC.
Yeah, no.
Who knows what they're advertising on Fox.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. I don't even know. Anyway, that's my, just like, for fuck's sake.
Fox News, they just advertise for windowless vans. I really wouldn't know because I never watch it. Yeah.
Here's white sheets. Holes pre-cut. Cone in place.
Oh, you're picking on Jason Chaffetz again.
We should talk about that, yeah?
We will. We'll get to that.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Oh. Let's start with Flynn, because this is
this is like kind of
this
the news
would be
of
the biggest news in the history of presidential scandals if
in this century
maybe even beyond. I mean, you're talking. I don't even think going back to the earliest days when there was collusion, maybe with the French and the British in the War of 1812.
Right. Yeah. But that was not about elections. Explain first what we're talking about because people might not know.
All right, Michael Flynn is Trump's basically head of national security. And this guy is very, very cozy with Russia. In fact, he's pretty much been embedded with Putin and Russia from the time he left public service.
Right.
He's been on the payroll, basically.
Right.
And what he's being accused of, and this has now been corroborated by at least 9 intelligence officials, is that after the election, but before Trump took office, he met with the Russian ambassador because on December 29th, Obama had just imposed new sanctions.
Right.
Because it had been proven that Russia had meddled in the election to help get Trump elected.
Right.
And Michael Flynn basically met with the Russian ambassador and said, don't worry about those sanctions. Once Trump gets in office, we're gonna take care of that.
Right.
That's illegal.
Yeah.
It's actually traitorous.
Right. Absolutely.
It's a violation of the Logan Act. It may be a violation of several other acts. You can't, while a sitting president is in power, you can't go and negotiate with an adversary with any other nation and promise foreign policy favors or gestures or changes.
In exchange for fucking with the election.
Well,
first of all, like...
Yeah. I mean, well, hold on a second. Because that takes it to another level of speculation.
Right.
That's not crazy. But let's just take that in and of itself. And it was kind of... It raised eyebrows when... I guess they couldn't deny that Flynn actually did have this conversation with the Russian ambassador.
Flynn met with Putin.
So, not with Putin. Flynn met with the Russian ambassador on or around after Obama issued these new sanctions. And that raised eyebrows, and Spicer and Ranch Bubis and everybody else, they stuck a camera in front of it. No. They didn't talk about sanctions. They didn't talk about anything like that. And the assumption, at least with all the talking heads we're listening to, is, well, Flynn must have lied to them. But I kind of think they're all in this together, because no one wants to believe that the entire Trump administration and the whole Republican higher power structure is embedded with the Russians to win elections. And
why would we not believe
that? Are.
Why would we not believe that? It's so insane to watch these people on MSNBC like really do like mental backflips to get away from the notion to avoid saying clearly this obvious thing happened, because they don't want to. I don't know, seem alarmist, but maybe we should be fucking alarmist.
Yeah.
It's fucking exactly what happened.
Probably.
And they're just like, well, maybe they just didn't. And maybe they just had coffee and
it's not that. Now, I mean, you've had 9 corroborating intelligence officials say, yeah, this happened. So they can't go with that anymore. What they're trying to assume now is that Pence went rogue and did this on his own, and he lied to Pence, and he lied to Priebus, and he maybe lied to Trump, and that so they all covered for him, and they're giving Trump an out.
Well, that's
to
my
cut
thing.
Flynn loose.
Why is the media giving Trump the
benefit of the doubt?
Well, no, they're not just the benefit of the doubt, but also they're crafting an argument for him.
Yes.
They're crafting an argument for him to get out away from this.
They do it all the time.
It's
because they can't accept that the Commander-in-Chief of the United States is that inept, that corrupt, that willing to sell out the security of the United States to an adversarial nation for power. It's something they can't wrap their head around and accept. They just can't.
It can't be that bad.
It can't be that bad is where they're coming from. It just can't. And we're here to tell you, yeah, it can.
Here's the,
and yeah,
yes,
it is.
No, it definitely can be and is, and worse than that. I mean, it's literally like...
And the Russians are starting to tip their hand about this. They panicked a little bit, and they actually offered up Edward Snowden.
Uh-huh.
For two reasons. One, to dangle a shiny thing and try to distract the press. MSNBC really didn't take the bait.
No.
I don't know who else might. Nobody, right? Right now, they're all kind of on the Flynn thing, so that really didn't work in that aspect. But also to so that the Trump administration would not be forced to maybe scale back the promises that Flynn actually did make to reduce the sanctions.
So
like, hey, well, you reduce these sanctions, we'll give you Snowden. Mm-hmm. Edward Snowden famously of, there's no difference between Trump and Hillary Clinton.
How'd that go, buddy?
Well, that might have gone really well. You might be extradited to the United States and charged with treason. And Donald
and executed.
Trump has gone on record that he'd like to execute you.
Yes. Whereas so, Obama was like...
I hope your protest vote was worth it, Edward Snowden.
Yeah. Well, not like he voted.
No, but if he would have, I guess he would have voted for Stein or something.
Oh, for fuck's sake. But we can talk about her in a minute. Yeah, so, I mean, what we're saying is probably what happened, likely what happened, is Flynn met with the Russians prior to the election, mm-hmm. promised them to repeal or draw back sanctions if they helped Trump win.
No. The timeline is not right for that. This meeting took place after the election.
I thought you said it was in September.
No, December.
December.
Yeah. No, all that other stuff I'm sure got worked out well in advance, too.
Well in advance.
With between Flynn and Paul Manafort and, you know, all the whole Gossamer-Schmucka there. So, you know.
So it's like.
But I'm sure that was part of that deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the trail has gone cold on that, at least. I mean, we know Congress isn't going to do anything, but the media has kind of got very, very bored of that very quickly, that. Okay, well, the intelligence communities are now saying that, yes, the Russians interfered with the election to get Trump elected. That sounds like a big story, but whatever.
What? We're going to let that go. Investigate it or something? Boring. God. Yeah. What is Trump tweeting about?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But now there's a chance that might revive that to an extent.
What's really interesting to me is that over the past 2 days, I've seen pretty serious journalists posting things like, whatever happened to that Russian story? Like, where did it go? And then I think it's interesting that today it got revived.
Sort of. By secondarily. This. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe not. But we're certainly talking about Russia again, and we really haven't been for the last... Okay, let's just remind everybody, it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Not 3 years, not 3 months. 21 days.
And it's been disaster after scandal after disaster after
just
scandal.
Just fucking shit show of 21 days. So, my lovely darlings, steel yourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're 21 days in, and I know I've had to take several days off of just, like, emotional self-care. Because we're 21 days in, and it's exhausting and overwhelming and ridiculous. But anyway... Yeah, so that's the Flynn thing, I guess. Like,
Well, let's talk about where this goes, right? So he's either going to have to cut him loose and say, well, see, there's a million reasons he doesn't want to do that.
No, at all.
Because if he does that, then...
There's no reason for Flynn to lie.
And then there's no reason not to investigate him.
Right.
Republicans still probably won't, but... if you cut him loose, you're admitting he did something wrong. And you're admitting probably de facto your administration did something wrong. Now, if journalists do their job, because congressional Republicans are not going to take the ball and run with this.
And no.
McCain may say something, and Lindsey Graham may say something, sure. And maybe Ben Sasse, and that's probably about it.
Yeah.
But House Republicans certainly are not going to do anything.
No. Like, investigate. An actual thing that happened as opposed to a fake thing that happened?
Yeah, like Benghazi.
No.
Right? No.
Yeah. I mean, not that Benghazi didn't happen, just, you know, Hillary is a... Anyway. on a related note, just before we get past Russia, which we could do a whole podcast about, but... So Trump did this interview with Bill O'Reilly. Did you see this?
No, I did not see
the interview. Oh, my God.
With Bill O.
So one. I didn't watch it, obviously, but I read the write-up about it, and I watched a clip, the most important clip, in which Bill O'Reilly grills him about Putin, and he's like, why do you have such respect for this man? He's a murderer.
Oh,
he's a murderer.
This, yeah.
And Trump's response was, hey, there's lots of murderers. You think our country's innocent? That's it. That's literally, like, that's it. That's his response. Like, he didn't deny that Putin's a murderer. He pushed him a little bit to get to the, like, admit that he's a murderer. But then his response was like, this is the president of the United States talking about the dictator in Russia and saying, yeah, he's a murderer, but, like, we have murderers here. Muh. And I'm like, yeah, we don't make them fucking president. Like, we don't, like, what?
On the one hand, he sort of had a very cynical point that people like you and me agree with.
Well, we were like, oh my God. There was this really hilarious article that was like, Donald Trump did something extraordinary today. He told the truth.
It reminded me of that scene from The Godfather where Kay says, senators and congressmen don't have people murdered. And Michael says, well, now who's being naive, Kay?
Right.
It kind of reminded me of that.
Right.
But this is the fucking president of the United States. This is not the head of the Corleone crime family.
Right, right. Or the KGB. Or, like, I mean...
yeah, I forgot about that. See, it's can't keep up with it.
That's the point.
Yeah.
It's the point. The shock doctrine. Just, like, just fucking flood you with bullshit.
And you know, you have no target to stay on.
Yeah, you have to... That's why, like, activism and activists that are good at this say, like, everybody focus on one or two things.
Yeah.
Don't try to fight everything at once.
Well,
because you just
Rick Wilson
can't.
Said that earlier.
Yeah.
He said the Democrats are, they're trying to fight everything. And it's like, yeah, on one hand, he's got a point, but.
No. So they do have to fight everything. They have to be completely, completely obstructionist. But activists with protesting and that kind of thing, like, pick a thing or two things that you care the most about. And that's going to be different for everybody. Pick one or two things, especially to start, and focus your energy on that. Don't try to go to every protest. Like, tomorrow, there are four different very public protests happening in Denver. Mm-hmm. And they are happening at the same time, which also we need to work on that. But I'm choosing to go to the one that is protesting Cory Gardner.
What time is that one?
1 to 3 in Skyline Park, right outside of his offices. He's still hiding from his constituents, and we'll get into that later.
At least Chaffetz is facing the music.
Yeah, right? But we'll get into that. But what I'm saying is, like, just pick one or two things. And for me, in case you guys didn't know, my thing is obviously, like, women's rights, reproductive rights, feminism,
yes,
LGBT issues,
yes,
and then also for sure criminal justice reform. Black Lives Matter, that mm-hmm. area. And then my third, because I'm kind of an old pro at this, I get to have three, would be immigration because of the current climate. So pick one, pick two, pick three if you have that much energy. But don't try to fight every little, like, you can't, and they're not little. It's going to be different for everybody, right? Everybody's going to have their own thing that they really, the environment, climate change, like, I can't go to everything.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Yeah. I have friends that are super passionate about the animal welfare stuff that just got rolled back, that we are no longer reporting on animal welfare stuff through, like, the USDA. That's huge for them. I can't dilute my energy with that. And I'm a huge animal lover. But, like, I just have, like, you got to have one or two things.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. the travel ban, the like, I care about all of it, and we're going to talk about most of it, but like for my activism and my phone calls and my protesting, I got to do like one or two, maybe three things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, it makes sense.
Yeah. So, speaking of criminal justice reform, I would like to talk about Jeff Sessions and Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
So, the hardest cabinet appointment for me was Jeff Sessions to be the Attorney General of the United States, to head the Department of Justice. We've talked about this before. He is a racist piece of shit. And so it was that was the biggest blow, I think, of other than like election night, inauguration day, the biggest blow for me was Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the worst thing that could happen for an area that I care so very deeply about, which is criminal justice reform. This guy did not get nominated to the federal court in the 80s because he was too racist. So now we're going to make him...
Republicans said he was too racist.
Republicans and Democrats agreed that he was too racist to be on the court. So now we're going to make him the head of the department whose job it is to make sure that the laws are not racist and that the law enforcement community acts appropriately toward everyone equally and that Black lives fucking matter.
It's so, going to be Sessions versus the courts for his whole tenure.
Yes.
And we'll win some of those battles and we'll lose some of those battles.
Yes.
But I think it's he's going to get sued for everything. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
That's the plan.
I mean, they sued the shit out of Holder, too, and Holder won 95% of the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Like...
They sued the Bush guy, what's his name?
Gonzalez,
too. I don't recall.
Gonzalez got run right out of his job. He was so outside of the law.
I don't recall. But, I mean, he can do real and lasting damage in the meantime.
He certainly will try.
We have
to be so hyper-vigilant.
Yes.
Because voting rights were already under assault, and that's going to go into overdrive.
And the day after his confirmation, which he was confirmed. So he was confirmed with every Republican and one Democrat.
Manchin, yeah.
Manchin of West Virginia. And so he is the new Attorney General. And the next day...
Let me just give an aside to that.
Yeah, please.
The sad reality is they're screaming about primarying Manchin. You can do that, and that just means that that seat will now go to a Republican.
Right.
That is the nature of West Virginia.
Right.
It sucks. There's battles.
We're kind of lucky that we have him in office.
Yeah. Look, there's battles we can win. There's people we can primary and win.
Yes.
West Virginia is not one of them.
Correct. And he voted... He doesn't always vote the right way, but we're talking about West Virginia here.
Yeah.
So we take the Democrat we have.
Yeah.
That's the Democrat that can win.
Yeah.
And will continue to win, and so we keep him.
I mean, go ahead and primary him, but that seat will just
don't
turn
do that.
Red.
No, like, please don't do that. Like, we can't protest primary people. We have to be smart. Yeah. We have to say, in West Virginia, it's near impossible to get a Democrat elected. One has been multiple times. Let's just keep that going. Because even if he votes with us only half the time or three quarters of the time, that's more than any Republican will vote with ever.
Yeah, with Manchin, it's something like 50 to 60%.
Yeah, so if you get a Republican, it's 0%. Yeah. So let's keep the 50 to 60 going and pick our battles in states that are swing states or blue states where people aren't standing up and doing the right thing.
Exactly.
So anyway, the next day, Trump signed this executive order. Because that's his favorite fucking pastime.
And I thought you guys hated Obama because of that. But now it's cool. Whatever.
No, it's fine. And like sweeping and unconstitutional. But anyway, it was strengthening law enforcement. Giving them more... I mean, it's kind of toothless because law enforcement is a local issue. Like, as much as we are... The federal government has, you know, sort of more control than states do. And I can't remember the term that the Constitution uses. stuff like law enforcement is so localized and so individualized. It's not even just by state. It's by like state, and then it's by county, and then it's by city, and right. there's a sheriff, and it's so localized. Yeah, that like I, King Joffrey, give law enforcement more power is like, what the fuck does that mean?
Right.
Like, there's no... The federal executive branch of the government doesn't control local law enforcement in any fucking way. The federal executive branch controls the federal law enforcement. So
we're going to get to that.
The DEA and ICE and those enforcement agencies. But when it comes to like the Denver Police Department, federal executive branch of government has literally zero control, in charge, funding. No jurisdiction over the Denver Police Department.
Well, jurisdiction if the Department of Justice has jurisdiction if they're violating people's civil rights.
Yeah, but they used Jeff to. Sessions doesn't believe that people have
those.
No,
I know, but I mean in a normal world.
Right.
In the not upside down world.
Right. Sure. So like I can give you an example. New Orleans is kind of a classically and famously corrupt city in terms of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And we know about this a lot because of Katrina, but I have friends who have lived there and currently live there. And I can tell you that the police department is just notoriously corrupt and really horrifyingly bad.
Yeah.
And so on multiple occasions in history, in recent history, the Department of Justice has had to come into the city of New Orleans and literally take over their police department and clean house mm-hmm. and run the police department while they search for and hire new police officers, implement different training programs, train these people, and then they give control back to the local law enforcement. That's the only time. And that's because of like such widespread, crazy, well-documented corruption and civil rights abuses mm-hmm. that like they have to do something. That's the only time. But just Trump being like, fucking law enforcement's going to be better now and you got power and we're not going to make you the bad guy, doesn't mean shit.
No.
Doesn't mean shit. But it's important that he did that the day after Jeff Sessions was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that signals to me that my worst nightmares are my reality, and that Jeff Sessions is absolutely going to try to overreach with his federal power to do things like, I don't know, enforce federal law around marijuana in Colorado or
that's going to go over real great. Let me tell you.
Okay. For those of you who don't live in Colorado, try fucking come at me, bruh. And that's
not just the conservatives here, most of them.
Pot smoking people in Boulder. That's the Colorado spirit.
Yeah.
We passed this law by voting. It overwhelmingly passed. It has not caused any great problems in our state. Mm-hmm. It has helped to fund education. It has helped to fund infrastructure. We're working on fixing the tax structure, which I'm not going to get into because yawn for you guys. I'm fascinated by it, but we're working on that. The world did not end. Cities didn't burn down. You know, babies didn't start smoking a bong at six. Like, it's
some
just
kids are
very,
getting into edibles, but yeah,
that's been fixed. That was an early problem that's mm-hmm. been fixed by packaging requirements. It has helped our state a tremendous amount. And if the federal government wants to come into the state of Colorado and start enforcing and shutting down businesses and arresting people, I will tell you that we're going to have some very strange bedfellows. We're going to have some militiamen, and we're going to have some hippies, and we're going to have the Chamber of Commerce, and we're going to have some teachers, and we're going to have some libertarians, and we're going to have some liberals, and we're going to have, I mean, of the one thing about Colorado that we can sort of unite about is like, we voted for this, and so it's the law, and you don't get to just come in here and dismantle this system that we've built.
It's sort of like Texas without the aggressive stupid.
Right.
And the tumbleweeds.
Right. And the ability to understand that, like, we're a fiercely independent state. Like, we're purple, but we also value our... We're like that, like, we sort of think of ourselves, I think, as, like, you know, we crossed the mountains and we got here, and, like, we...
That's what I did, exactly.
The cowboy sort of, like...
Sort of.
You know, we did it. that's the people that built this state.
No. No, and you get that feeling, and just to sort of wax poetic for a minute, like when you go out to the mountains, which are just 20 minutes west of downtown here.
Yeah, about 10 minutes from my house.
You're like, how did we build a civilization in this? This is crazy.
Who were these people?
Yeah, who were these people that paved roads and built mines? Like, this is nuts.
Blew holes through mountains to build roads and cities. And
it does kind of puff your chest out a little bit and be like, yeah, we're frontier people.
That's right.
Kind of.
That's right. Yeah, I mean.
But that attitude prevails.
It
That's
does.
What you're saying.
It does. It does. It still does to this day. We don't take kindly to people coming in here and telling us what to do when we've all decided what we want to do.
Exactly.
You're an outside. No, like, no. So that'll be really interesting for our state, particularly because I think Colorado has the most well-established marijuana industry and set of regulations and laws. We were the first, although Washington gets mad at being the like stepsister. They passed it at the same time. They just implemented it later.
Nobody thinks of that.
So we're sort of famous for it. And they're like, hey, we are here too. Like, we're the they're the Marsha.
Yeah.
So
they're the Jan, you mean.
Or the Jan, sorry. So all eyes are on us and Jeff Sessions. And I think he's in for quite a battle if he comes after us on pot.
I think that's lower on his list. He's got black people to oppress and immigrants to oppress.
Yeah.
And voting rights to strip away.
Yes. But he's
civil
like,
rights to
violate. The reason that people keep talking about marijuana, though, is because he brings it up a lot.
He does, which
he
is
like
weird.
He weirdly talks about it a lot like, in situations like, where it's not really appropriate.
I think at a young age he watched Reefer Madness and thought it was a documentary.
Really stuck with
and
him.
And just seared like, this is so horrible that they, look at what these people are doing. This is terrible.
I don't know, like, but you know,
maybe he had a really obnoxious roommate in college. Like he got stoned a lot and would give him wedgies.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, but he is a little singularly focused on marijuana. Like, oh, I used to like the KKK until I found out some of their members smoked pot. That's a quote. And you're like, wait, well, hold on.
Wait, what?
There's a lot to unpack in that, but like, that's your problem with the KKK. You hate, okay. That's a whole thing for you.
Yeah.
He was questioned about it during the confirmation hearings, and he dodged it artfully. So we really have no indication of what he plans to do. But I would bet dollars to donuts that that's one of his personal priorities. Whether that's one of the things he does first or just as like a pet project on the weekends, I don't know. But it's going to become a thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, getting away from that, I want to talk about the confirmation hearings themselves. So so Senator Cory Booker testified against Senator Jeff Sessions at his own confirmation hearing. That's the first time that's ever happened in U.S. history, that a sitting senator would testify
against
another sitting senator who's being confirmed for a cabinet position. That's never happened. He made a very impassioned plea about his, you know, Sessions' sort of record on race and civil rights. It was one for the books. I loved everything about it. John Lewis didn't testify technically, but gave just an incredibly impassioned speech in opposition to the confirmation. That's after that, of course, Trump attacked John Lewis, saying that he was all talk. Just like, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about, you obviously.
The media cared for 24 hours and then Trump dangled another shiny object and they chased
him. Yeah. Like he literally said, like, he's all talk and his district is just garbage. It's hard to live. There's murder. Blah. And you're like, well, actually, like, it's one of the most, like, well, anyway. So that happened. And then it got put on hold, the confirmation hearing, for some, rules, essentially procedural reasons. We were able to hold off on it for a couple weeks. So when it resumed, Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, took the floor and started to read a letter written by Coretta Scott King, a civil rights activist and also widow of Martin Luther King Jr., that she had written back in the 80s when Jeff Sessions was trying to be confirmed to be a federal judge, which we told you earlier didn't work. So Coretta Scott King back in the day wrote this letter about how he should not be confirmed.
Yeah.
That her late husband wouldn't, you know, have agreed with his stance on race and policy and all that stuff. So Elizabeth Warren takes the stand and tries to, or starts reading this letter. And the Republicans,
Mitch McConnell specifically,
shut her down and told her that she was impugning his character, which is against some bullshit rule in the Senate, and that she was no longer allowed to speak during the confirmation hearings. And when the internet freaked the fuck out and said, like, the fuck are you talking about? This is what he said. She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted. Which has become the rallying cry for everyone with any sense, and certainly for the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
Cecile Richards, for example, quote, she was warned, she was given an explanation, nevertheless, she persisted. The history of progress for women summed up in 11 words. So them shutting her down made it into an entirely bigger news story. They created a hashtag. The internet exploded. It's literally become like a rallying cry. They just handed her like a campaign slogan for 2020. Like, what idiots. So anyway, the world melted down about it, as they should have, because it's fucking bullshit, sexist nonsense and super racist. Because the following day, several male senators decided that they were going to read the letter, and they succeeded in doing so from start to finish without being impugning of Jeff Sessions' character. The funny thing for me is, like, this letter was written and read at a confirmation hearing in the 80s, and somehow it wasn't impugning his character then. But now, a loudmouth feminist lady reads it at a confirmation hearing in 2017, and she's impugning his character and is rebuked and no longer allowed to speak at the confirmation hearing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not have a problem with women in this country.
Or race.
We're post-racial, and women are totally equal. Yeah. Thoughts?
Well, Sessions, of course, did get confirmed. As you said, along party lines plus Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
And there we are. In the past week, DeVos also got confirmed.
Yes.
Betsy DeVos. Her... Pence had to cast the tiebreaker on that one, actually. They got two Republicans to cross over.
They did. And that's the first time in many, 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 many decades that there's ever been a vice president that had to cast a tie-breaking vote for a cabinet.
Yeah.
Yeah, confirmation.
And some journalists take the tack of, oh, this is just how polarized we've become. And others are a little more savvy and say, this is the first time that cabinet picks have been so controversial and unqualified that it's become a fight.
And others, like me, say we have to look at this from a historical perspective and look at the impact, even though we didn't win, right? It's progress. We are making an impact with these phone calls and with these protests and with everything that we're doing.
Well, we haven't even gotten to the town halls yet.
Right. So Congress is on recess. Is this what you're talking about? Next week or 2 weeks from now? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next week? The 20th. So 2 weeks.
Well, I'm just talking about what's been happening in the last couple days.
Right. People are coming home. Before we get to that, I want to read this thing real quick that somebody posted because I think it's important. Indivisible, the Indivisible Guide that we talk about, the former congressional staffers that wrote a guide to how the Tea Party was so effective and how liberals can be that effective. This is what they said. A note for all of us who feel defeated after Sessions. This is the long game. We're going to lose a lot. We're going to get good at losing. We're going to lose cabinet votes for terrible nominees. We're going to lose bills that are offensive and appalling. But while we are losing, something else is going to happen. We're going to keep raising our voices, and slowly our representatives are going to start listening to us. We've seen it happen. It won't be because of next week's call to action. It'll happen over months. Sorry, hold on. It'll happen over months where you keep showing up regularly. Then we're going to start winning. It'll sneak up on us. We won't understand why we are winning, but it starts with losing in a particular way, where we raise our voices and call it out when we aren't listened to, where we get close but not quite there. The first 100 days of a president's term are the honeymoon period, the moment when he's most likely to get his agenda enacted. Trump is spending his first 100 days mired in controversy, scandal, and backbiting. And that's because you haven't forgotten for a moment to let anyone in Washington forget just how unpopular he is. Every time we change the narrative, every time we delay, every time there's a newspaper story about a member of Congress avoiding his or her constituents, ahem, Cory Gardner, that's a win, and it matters. You've already made history. You've delayed the confirmation of Trump's cabinet members longer than any time in recent history. You've stopped gutting on the Congressional Ethics Office. You've made Republicans so nervous about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act that it's been pushed further and further down the road. You caused an uproar of historic proportions over Trump's Muslim ban and saved lives and reunited families in the process. You've inspired people who have never before taken action to make their voices heard and learn how to do things like check how their members of Congress voted and call them out on it. We'll never know about some of the victories, because those will be the fights that this administration considered starting and then realized it couldn't win. We're in this together, every visit, every call, every loss, every win. That's just what friends do.
That's well said, and you know, this is what we're always screaming about. To play grumpy advocate for a second, I love all the energy, obviously, that all the resistance that Trump and his agenda are getting, and it is making a difference.
Yes.
And it does matter, and it's not slowing down after the march a couple weeks ago.
No, which is amazing.
It seems to be ramping up, and it's going to need to ramp up because there's a lot of horrifying things that are happening, and we're going to get to that in the second half of the podcast. I think the next big, really ugly confrontation is with these ICE raids.
Yes.
And we're going to get to that.
Yeah. I'm going to try not to cry.
But also, it really makes me think this sort of galvanization in the face of a possible Trump presidency should have easily kept him from winning the election, and somehow we weren't organized and passionate enough for that to happen.
Yeah.
Part of it is because we were too disparate, playing the purity games, and a lot of people took it for granted. A lot of people thought they could afford a protest vote.
Yeah.
I am guilty as well of saying week after week after week, there's no possible way this asshole can actually win.
Right.
Yes, totally go out and vote, but there's no way he can win, and I should have said he can win and be
scared. He will win if you don't fucking get off your ass and do everything you can. Like, we've unpacked our own failings and the failings of our comrades, but what we have to do now, and this has happened in our life with people that we know, is they've reached out. I've had several people that I know reach out to me that I never expected to have this happen and say, look, I don't know what I'm doing, but I can't just sit here and watch this happen. Mm-hmm. How can I help? And I'm sorry that I'm stupid, and I'm sorry I don't know, and I'm sorry that, like, I wasn't as involved and I feel bad. But, and I'm like, okay, stop all of that nonsense. You're not stupid because you don't know. You don't need to feel bad. There's no judgment. I swear to God, if you come to the table right now, I will welcome you with open arms, and I will have so much goddamn love in my heart for you, and I will help you in any way that I can.
And we are.
And we are. And that's exactly it. But they're doing it, which is the crazy
part. Really impressive.
They're very much like, what about, like, what's the issue today? Or, like, now that confirmation vote is over and we lost, like, does it matter? And I'm like, no, it matters. And this is the next thing you call about. Now we call about, where's your fucking town hall, motherfucker?
Mm-hmm.
Come face your constituents. Paid protesters my ass. Like, there's always a next thing to do. And if you don't know what that thing is to do, that's okay. That's totally fine. Like, don't feel like, oh, well, we lost. I guess we're done. Like, we're not done. And there's something else to do. And we will get under these motherfuckers' skins, and we will hold them accountable. And we might lose a whole lot. But in the meantime, we are going to remind people day after day, week after week, and it's only been three, month after month, as long as this thing goes on, that they didn't listen to us, and that the Republican Party is solely responsible for the shit that's going to go down because of what they voted for. Mm-hmm. And we're going to remind them that we asked them not to do that, that we furiously protested them doing it. They did it anyway, and here's the result, and they're going to pay for it in 2018, and they're going to pay for it in 2020. So don't give up hope, and don't be like, well, I guess we don't need to protest DeVos anymore. No. She tried to enter a public school and was physically blocked from the fucking entrance by some protesters.
Which is amazing.
Who were screaming shame at her. And she had to turn around and walk away because they physically would not let her into the school
building. And now you have to wonder if she's walking away thinking, is it worth this?
Right.
Do I want to do this?
Why am I putting up with this?
Which is great.
Which is wonderful.
That's exactly what I want her thinking every day.
Every day. Why am I doing this? I don't even know what I'm doing, first of all. And now I'm just getting like screamed at.
It's on the news, me being publicly shamed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. So don't like, the thing I just read said, we're going to lose a lot, but we're going to hold them accountable every step of the way so that every time they make a shitty decision and a shitty vote and they run away from us and they're fucking cowards, we log it. And we hold them accountable the next election. We remind everybody every day of what they're doing. And then we build a huge campaign starting now where we remind people, this is what you voted for last time. Be aware of what that caused. And that's the game. That's politics, right?
Yeah.
Show people what one party is. Show people what another party is. Not by... oh, he's a pussy grabber and she's a corrupt. Not that. Like, you elected these people. This is what they did. This is the result. And people are going to start feeling it in their lives.
Yeah.
Their kids' education is going to get shittier. They're going to lose their health care. Like, this, the Republicans' agenda is physically dangerous for Americans. They're going to feel it.
Yeah.
Not like Obama, like, oh, well, where's the death panel? Like, this is going to be actually affecting people's lives. And yeah. And they're going to want to know who's responsible. And that's why we do this every day.
Yeah.
Is to remind people every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
You know, on that subject, how come Carly Fiorina didn't get a cabinet post? It's because she sassed him in the debates?
Yeah, she sassed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a man, you can get away with that, but...
No. Fuck.
Not Carly.
She sassed him. It's not okay.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we got a lot of horribly depressing things to talk about, and also talk about how Trump may be losing his mind and imploding, and all the leaks that are coming out of the camp, and how is this thing possibly sustainable for another year, let alone four?
It's only been 3 weeks.
So you'll want to stay tuned for all that. We will be right back. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. So, what did you want to go back to first? You want to read the Politico story before we get to the real heavy duty stuff?
Yeah.
I can read it, or would you like to read it?
No, I've done enough talking tonight.
You've done enough talking? All right.
So earlier today, Travis sent me this story, and we decided that it would be best to just not try to summarize it. Let's just read it in full, because it perfectly and horrifyingly summarizes what we think is the president's...
We'll keep vamping, because I'm finding it.
...mental state. I mean, so basically, like, I don't know if y'all know, but there's been so many leaks coming out of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so odd because he's so known for like needing loyalty and needing like demanding it really and firing people if he even gets the slightest underpinning of there not being like a sense of loyalty, devotion, and passion for him. And yet his White House is the leakiest faucet ever. And it's of like not like... they're in talks to do this. It's like, oh, the president's losing his mind.
I got the story here. I'm going to read it.
Okay, please
the,
do.
It's the title is Trump Vexed by Challenges, Scale of Government. The new, and this is in Politico.com, by Alex Instead, Kenneth P. Vogel, and Josh Dossi. The new president's allies say he has been surprised that government can't be run like his business. Being president is harder than Donald Trump thought, according to aides and allies who say that he's growing increasingly frustrated with the challenges of running the massive federal bureaucracy. In interviews, nearly 24 people who've spent time with Trump in the 3 weeks since his inauguration said that his mood has careened between surprise and anger as he's faced the predictable realities of governing, from congressional delays over his cabinet nominations and legal fights holding up his aggressive initiatives to staff infighting and leaks. God, there have been so many leaks.
So many leaks.
We'll get to that in a minute. The administration's rocky opening days have been a setback for a president who, as a billionaire businessman, sold himself to voters as being uniquely qualified to fix what ailed the nation. Yet it has become apparent, say those close to the president, most of whom requested anonymity to describe the inner workings of the White House. Well, if most did...
Well, I thought the same thing when I
read
it.
They didn't name anybody.
Yeah.
That the transition from overseeing a family business to running the country has been tough on him.
Aww.
Pumpkin. Baby. Trump often asks simple questions about policies, proposals, and personnel. And when discussions get bogged down in details, the president has been known to quickly change the subject to, quote, seem in control at all times, close quote. One senior government official said, or direct questions about details to his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, or House Speaker Paul Ryan. He loves Paul Ryan now. Trump has privately expressed disbelief over the ability of judges, bureaucrats, or lawmakers to delay or even stop him from filling positions and implementing policies. He thought he was being elected king.
Yes. King Joffrey.
Yeah, King Joffrey, and now he's not. Don't drink the wine, Joffrey. After Trump grew infuriated by disclosures of his confrontational phone calls with foreign leaders, an investigation was launched into the source of the leaks, according to one White House aide. We'll get to that. Who do you think the leaker is? It's probably more than one person.
Oh, definitely.
National Security Council staffers have been instructed to cooperate with inquiries, including requests to inspect their electronic communications, said two sources familiar with the situation. So that's like number one priority in the Trump White House, right, is find the mole 3 weeks into this thing.
3 weeks, 21 days.
It's not clear whether the investigation is a formal proceeding, how far along it is, or who is conducting it. Why don't we get Trey Gowdy to run it? He seems to be pretty good at doing these. He's got some experience.
It's going to be like, oh my God. Okay.
The administration is considering limiting the universe of aides with access to the calls or their transcripts, said one administrative official, adding that the leaks and Trump's anger over them had created a climate where people are, quote, very careful who they talk to, close quote. Well, they're not that careful. The president and his allies believe career NSC staff assigned from other agencies are out to get them. Mm-hmm. In turn, maybe that's because you foisted Bannon on him, you asshole. Mm-hmm. In turn, some NSC staff believe Trump does not possess the capacity for detail and nuance required to handle the sensitive
issues discussed
on the calls, and that he has politicized their agencies by appointing chief strategist Bannon to the council. You think so?
Yeah.
Last week, Trump told an associate he had become wary of infighting among and leaks from his White House staff, quote, because it reflects on me, quote, and that he intended to sit down staffers to tell them to cut this shit out, quote. I use that with my dog sometimes, too. And
cut that shit out.
Yeah, the tone is right sometimes.
My husband, too, sometimes.
Yeah. He also became aggravated after learning about complications surrounding his appointment of one of his top fundraisers, Anthony Scaramucci, to a Plum White House job, which Trump blamed on internal jockeying between aides, according to one person with knowledge of the situation. I don't know who Anthony Scaramucci is.
No, I don't.
Probably
either.
A gangster. I don't mean that because of his name. I mean, because that's who Trump pals around with.
Yeah.
Trump, quote, was furious, this person said. He doesn't like this shit. The White House press office did not respond to a series of detailed questions about the way the president has coped with leaks, infighting, and setbacks. I'll just listen to Sean Spicer, he'll tell you. Mm-hmm. Christopher Ruddy, a Trump friend and the chief executive of the conservative Newsmax media, You know, the ones with the ads tell you to hoard the gold and the toilet paper and the crash is coming.
Mm-hmm. Dick pills and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Said, quote, running the federal government is something new for him, for sure.
Well, that explains it.
Yeah. It wasn't the whole thing with Obama that we can't afford someone to learn on the job.
No, everyone has already run the federal government, obviously, when you get elected president.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But Ruddy added, I think if he's demonstrated anything in his life, he is a very fast learner and adapts very quickly. The man is not to be underestimated.
And I'll Can we just remember that he can't read? But go ahead.
Or write.
No.
He can get banks to loan him money, though. For all his frustrations, Trump has revealed in the trappings of the, he has reveled in the trappings of the presidency. He has taken a liking to the Oval Office, where he spends much of his time working. That's my scare quotes on that.
Yeah.
Following a recent gathering of business leaders, he brought the group into the storied room and showed them around. Is that sentence necessary in the story?
No.
It's like, see, he is presidential. He shows people around the Oval.
Show him around. You walk in and you see the whole room. It's an oval.
Well,
we're gonna go this is the desk, and
this is where I make very important decisions.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, finish that.
But he also sought refuge from the pressures of the presidency, frequently calling up old friends and sounding them out about golf. I thought they hated Obama for the golf. Why does Trump get away with all this?
Oh, come on, pussy grabber in chief.
I think pretty much every president has sought refuge from the pressures of the presidency and called old friends. That's not that wild.
Nope.
Trump aides joke that they wish their boss would spend more time at his Mar-a-Lago estate in West Palm Beach. Yeah, me too. In fact, I hope he spends all his time there.
No,
because
then
White House.
Fucking Steve Bannon, well, he's already running it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Where they say the president appears more relaxed and at ease with his servants and his racist butler. I added that. He dispensed hugs and kisses to female guests attending a Red Cross ball, I bet, at the estate last week.
They were very into it, by the way.
And is scheduled to return this weekend for a round of golf with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. I thought the thing that conservatives hated most about Obama was all the golf he played.
Well, no. They hate him because he's black. But he's they criticized him. He's a black dude playing on a white golf course, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
Most of those interviewed for this story requested anonymity to describe the inner workings of a White House where they say the tension has been intensified by the president's propensity for knee-jerk micromanaging when faced with disappointment and jockeying among aides to avoid blame or to claim credit when possible. Credit for what? The interviews paint a picture of a powder keg of a workplace where job duties are unclear, morale among some is low, factionalism is rampant, and exhaustion is running high. Oh, so like Keller Williams. Two visitors to the White House last week said they were struck by how tired the staff looks. In Washington circles, talk has turned to whether a staff shakeup is in the works. That looks really bad 3 weeks into your presidency.
21 days. They're just like, fuck this. No.
Shake it all up, baby. One person close to Trump said, quote, I think he'd like to do it now, but he knows it's too soon. Maybe he'll do it every day. It's a new cabinet.
You're fired.
New advisors every day.
You're fired.
You're fired. You know he wants to do it. He'll probably televise it too. Those closest to the president are unnerved by that prospect. Yeah, because of their jobs, which they say would be a tacit acknowledgement that their team is struggling.
So.
Yeah. If not, we'd think it's fine. Kushner, who is among Trump's most trusted advisors, has been incensed by reports that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who has ripped the White House over its implementation of Trump's executive order restricting travel from 7 predominantly Muslim countries, could want a job in the White House as part of a, quote, second wave of staffers that will replace initial hires. While Christie hasn't said he wants a job, the rumor has been fanned by his allies. He has allies? Kushner has long had tensions with Christie and played a role in blocking him from getting a senior job in the administration. Some staffers worry about running afoul of Kushner and say they're unclear about his role, describing his portfolio as amorphous. No one quite knows what it is, said one. It's confusing. He's just that guy. Hold on. My phone just ran away. Okay. Perhaps the job Trump has micromanaged the most is that of press secretary yes. Sean Spicer, yes. whose performance as the public face of the White House hasn't always pleased the image-conscious president. Trump, a voracious consumer of cable news, has been known to critique aides and surrogates for their appearances. After Spicer's press briefings, the president has told his spokesman that he's unhappy about specific answers or his demeanor. Maybe he needs one of those shirts you don't have to tuck in. The president, who is obsessive about looks and appearance, even wasn't happy
who
with
also
his
wears the worst, most ill-fitting suits, but go ahead.
His voice is off, too. Even was unhappy with a Saturday Night Live parody of a Spicer briefing, partly because the combative press secretary was depicted by a female comedian, Melissa McCarthy. So there, your Politico says you're onto something.
Uh-huh.
After it aired, Spicer has proposed cracking a joke about the send-up during his next briefing or even firing a squirt gun, as McCarthy had done in the sketch. Trump vetoed the idea, according to one person briefed on the matter. Spicer, a 45-year-old party operative in a squeaky little voice, I added that, who rose through the ranks of the Republican National Committee, has told several people that he finds the nonstop demands of the position difficult.
21 days.
That's one way to put it.
21 days.
For now, the president is standing by his press secretary before he says, you're fired. After CNN reported Tuesday that Trump regretted hiring Spicer and was disappointed in him, the president spoke with his press secretary and told him that he was in fine shape. Trump, who has been reluctant to admit any missteps, also has acknowledged to Spicer that it was a mistake to send him to the White House briefing room on the administration's first full day to berate reporters for coverage of his inauguration crowd size.
Yeah.
It wasn't Spicer's idea.
Nope, I know.
That's hard to believe. I thought Sean came up with that all himself. Like, listen, Mr. President,
what
we need
I really
want to
do
him.
Is go out there, yell at the press, and lie. That's what I want to do.
And tell them that
press
your
secretary.
Crowd size was huge.
Just like your hands and other parts.
Yeah. For all, but he sold it.
Not to the president's satisfaction,
no.
apparently.
For all of Trump's frustrations about staff drama, however, it isn't clear they're going away anytime soon. Tensions remain between the staffs of Chief of Staff Reince Priebus and Bannon.
Ranch Priebus.
Priebus's advisors blamed Bannon's team for the botched rollout of the travel ban executive order, saying that they hadn't done the needed legwork ahead of time, as in any legwork.
Mm-hmm.
And some were surprised that First Lady Melania Trump decided to hire Lindsay Reynolds as her Chief of Staff, along with Stephanie Winston Wolkoff as her senior advisor. Reynolds and Wolkoff worked on the inauguration planning team, and Reynolds, a Republican fundraiser and event planner, abruptly quit before Inauguration Day. At the time, several people attributed her departure to, quote, personality conflicts with Wolkoff, a Trump family friend who was over. I really could give a shit.
Yeah,
about
I don't care
that.
About any of this.
There are indications, however, that the new White House team is moving forward and looking for reinforcements, among other ways to calm the waters. Trump's top aides and allies are frantically searching for help for Spicer in the form of a communications director, a demanding role Spicer has been juggling along with his press secretary duties. Yeah, usually isn't that two different jobs?
Yes, very much so. Wow. Watch The West Wing.
All right. Yeah, no, I mean, I've watched it.
Like, you can't have Toby and CJ be the same person. That's insane.
Or, like, I was thinking House of Cards. Like, I'm forgetting the name.
No, straight now. Toby and CJ, that's two different jobs.
Yeah. On Wednesday, some of Trump's top advisors met with James Baker, a Republican Party statesman who was chief of staff in the Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations, and talked things over. If the opening days of Trump's presidency have been rocky and unconventional, many of his admirers aren't bothered by it because they're the only ones that count.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only ones that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not disappointed in the president's work so far. He operates like many great CEOs I know, and I hope he continues to manage
How
the country
great
in a
CEOs
manner
do you know?
Worlds apart from the way we've seen in the past, and Michael Caputo, who was a Trump campaign aide. It's about time. And that is the story.
Okay, I have just a couple juicy details to add to the leaks.
Oh boy.
This comes from New York Magazine, and it is quotes from these anonymous Trump aides. Trump is still struggling to work in his requisite amount of TV time. He's upgraded the TV in his private dining room so he can watch the news with lunch, and he almost always makes time to watch White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's daily briefing, which can last as long as 50 minutes. Trump summons Spicer to critique his performance, and the two regularly go through news clips, with the president marking unfavorable coverage with a black Sharpie.
Didn't at least it's not a red Sharpie, and at least he doesn't make Spicer dress like Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Trump heads up to the residence around 6:30 p.m. Literally, the president stops working at 6:30. And when Mr. Trump is not watching television in his bathrobe or on his phone, reaching out to old campaign hands and advisors, he will sometimes set off to explore the unfamiliar surroundings of his new home.
No.
Trump finds the backdrop of the Oval Office validating and is obsessed with the decor, but he doesn't always get the details right. Though he excitedly pored over a book that offered him 17 options for window furnishings, he incorrectly bragged to a visitor that his office drapes were used by Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay.
They were made for Bill Clinton.
Close enough.
Okay. There's one more that I have to tell you. Okay. I don't know. But anyway, like, it's horrifying. There's news that, like, they don't, the people who work in the White House don't know how to use the light switches. So they regularly meet in the dark. I feel like,
why don't they just ask somebody?
Well, exactly. So, like, there are people that work in, you know, aides confer in the dark because they cannot figure out how to operate the light switches in the cabinet room.
That's got to be apocryphal.
Visitors conclude their meetings and then wander around testing doorknobs until finding one that leads to an exit. Huh. In a darkened, mostly empty West Wing, Mr. Trump's provocative chief strategist, Stephen K. Bannon, finishes another 16-hour day planning new lines of attack. There are people that have worked in the White House for, like, look, you know the movie The Butler, right? Like, people who have worked in the White House for decades.
Yeah, sure.
These aren't political posts. These aren't things that you get to appoint. These are just, like, staff of the White House. The
cleaning crew, for God's sake.
But, like, don't ask the brown people how the lights work or what.
They'd be embarrassed, yeah.
It's crazy. We'll just meet in the dark and also just find your way out, I guess. It's just the White House. Please wander off alone. Like,
look, maybe that's not unusual the first couple weeks. I mean, it literally is a new office, you know?
Yeah, but people...
When I went to work at my new office, I got lost plenty. And,
but these aren't people that work there. These are visitors that are coming to the White House that are just sort of like, shoo now, go find your way out. And they're like, where is it? And they're like, I don't know. Like, but people work in the White House that have worked there for 30 years. You could easily be like, hey, Joe, can you please escort Mr. Salazar out? Like, you know, or, hey, man, where's the light switch? It's weird in here, right? It's not normal. And they're like, oh, yeah, sorry, it's under this thing and you got to do the thing. Like, ask a question. But this is the height of, like, you know, the tired old joke, men don't ask for directions and all that bullshit. It's this, like, ego, I don't want anyone to know that I don't know. So I'd really, literally rather have meetings
in a dark room
than ask someone who I see as below me and admit to them I don't know something and ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. They have meetings in the dark and people just wander around the West Wing trying doorknobs till they find their way out. And hopefully they don't become like mole people who just live in the White House forever because there's no light and they can't find the door. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, he's losing it. Like,
yeah, I mean, how long can this last? This just doesn't seem tenable.
No, it's 21 days.
The resistance is going to get more, not less. This Flynn thing is going to be a huge pain in the ass for him.
They're going to start. Like, SNL is going to start trolling him with.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like the things that should bother him. If this was just a normal, awful, garbage person president, the things that might bother him are the courts are resisting his executive orders.
Right.
And maybe he's getting some resistance to his cabinet picks.
Right.
But, like, he gets pissed off at the Saturday Night Live skits.
What he was most upset about with the Melissa McCarthy, Sean Spicer thing was that Sean Spicer is played by a woman. And so the internet got a hold of that leak. And they called upon some women. They started with Rosie O'Donnell, who's, like, famously feuding with Donald Trump, right? Like, they've been feuding for, like, a decade.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, my God. If they're pissed that Melissa McCarthy played Sean Spicer, Rosie O'Donnell has to play
Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
And like that makes my heart sing because it would piss him off so much. He would lose his mind. And then the internet got really creative and they were like Ellen DeGeneres as Mike Pence because the irony there is delicious. Mm-hmm. I can't remember Rachel Maddow as Reince Priebus. like just all these like women playing men.
I don't know
men.
That Maddow would do that.
No, she's not an actor. She's a journalist. But anyway, I mean, like that's the shit that gets under his skin that pisses him off all day long. That like, that's what drives his day. Not like, you know, these terrorist attacks or like the horrific shanty fire in the Philippines that mm-hmm. destroyed like 15,000 homes. Like he doesn't give a shit about any of that. He cares that like a chick played a person on his team and made him look bad. Mm. That is the president's priority. And also it frustrates him that we have checks and balances and co-equal branches of government, three of them.
Yeah, I mean, he can't seem to, and which we predicted, of course, the emotionally or psychologically handle the resistance or the satire or the criticism, and it's just going to get worse and worse.
Well, and it happens to every president. Like he's
well, of course.
Rife for it because it's so easy, but every president.
Yeah, literally every president since Washington.
Yeah.
Washington had resistance.
Yeah, they had political cartoons and editorials and like, yeah, yeah. No, it's the way, it's the American way to make fun of the president and to
question
criticize
him.
By satire and to, yeah, yeah.
And to provide resistance if you were in
you know,
an opposing party or have an opposing point of view on something.
Yes, exactly. Okay, we...
And then this president is not psychologically handled to equip that, psychologically equipped to handle that.
Correct. I'm going to read a quote from Voltaire. So we're talking before George Washington. He said, "To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize." Which I think pretty much sums up our current president.
Well, as far as he sees it, at least.
Right. And if he had his way, and we did not have co-equal branches of government, and we didn't have checks and balances, and we didn't have a judiciary that was willing to stand up for itself for the time being,
well,
then we would literally, he would be like, no, there's no press, and if you say something bad about me, you go to jail.
Well, hold on a second. I'm not convinced that we're not going to get there.
Oh, no, me neither.
See, here's the thing, right? I think when I heard that the Ninth Circuit Court, we haven't even talked about that,
yeah.
shut down his travel ban.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to lose it. He really didn't. In fact, it was sort of almost shocking that he basically, his initial reaction apparently was,
they can't do that.
I think we're going to, you know, I think we've got a good case and, you know, the court battle's not over. And I think he basically said what a typical president would say in this situation, and I was sort of taken aback by that, but then, you know, he did kind of do a half psychotic tweet later, but you know that he at least learned at this point, like he had learned sort of like the dog with the shock collar, like I really 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 want to, you know, attack the cat, but I know that I'll get shocked if I do it, but that didn't change how he felt inside.
Well, he said, like, what kind of country are we living in where a judge can say that the president's order to not allow evil people in is not okay?
Well, that was before the full court ruling.
And you're like, the country you're in charge of.
Yes.
The literal constitution says that.
Sure. But the full court ruling, his reaction was actually fairly tame. But that was just his reaction, his outward reaction to the press. You know, inside he's fuming.
Oh my God! Yes.
And I think as he unravels more and more, the way Nixon did in his last days, mm-hmm. We are going to see things like personally going after, or at least trying to go after journalists, trying to go mm-hmm. after publications. Mm-hmm. Trying to outlaw things, trying to sanction networks that aren't favorable to him. I mean, he's talked this game before.
Yeah.
Three weeks into it, he hasn't done any of that
3 weeks, by the way. 3 weeks.
But I am far from convinced that that stuff is not going to happen.
Yes. Agreed. And worse. Yes.
Or at least he very much want to. Now, he may not find an aide in the House who's willing to go that far. Or is able to, or Jared Kushner may be able to talk him out of 90% of this stuff, you know. But eventually we are going to get the full-on crazy.
Definitely.
I'd be shocked if we didn't. There's no pivot coming.
No, it's only going to get worse from here.
You would think, right?
Without question. Without a doubt in my mind, it's only going to get worse from here.
And that comes back, and this is, I think, a decent segue. That comes back to, because right now, the Republican Congress is just rubber stamping everything.
Yeah.
Because they're too afraid not to.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do they finally stand up? And there is some speculation with the Flynn thing. They're going to have to, maybe, mm-hmm. some of them.
Because, like, my dad's going to be super pissed about the Russia thing.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, he's already pissed about it.
Yeah, but then he turns on Fox and Spicer's just saying it's a lie, it's fake news. That's literally what they're saying.
Nah, this is different.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
For sure. But, yeah, like... The man's going to unravel. I mean, he's already unraveling. He's 21 days in. He hates his job. He doesn't get to do whatever he wants. He doesn't understand why. He doesn't understand how the government works. He hates judges. The judge that he just appointed to the Supreme Court, who hasn't had a confirmation hearing yet from Colorado, came out and said, I think it's very disheartening the way that the president is speaking about the judiciary.
Yeah.
So now he's in a battle with his own Supreme Court nominee before the confirmation hearing.
There's an alternate theory to that, but we'll get to Garouche later.
Yeah. He is not. I mean, we all know that he's not equipped for that. We're 21 days in, and we are literally like on the brink of several different constitutional crises.
Yeah.
It can't last. It won't last. If it does last, I have very, very dire predictions about what that looks like.
So at what point does Congress finally stand up and say enough is enough?
Well,
is it when he signs the executive order that says reporters who aren't nice to me go to jail or whatever?
Here's what I think. So someone pointed out very astutely that the Constitution says that the vice president and 8 members of his cabinet are all it takes to remove the president from office. Well, we don't have 8 yet.
We won't have 8 that are going to have the balls to do that.
Why?
Well, one of
them. As long as you get 8,
one of them is his son-in-law.
That he's not a member of the cabinet.
Okay, not officially. No.
No, cabinet members are like secretary of.
Right. Right.
So as soon as we get 8 of those, and Mike Pence, you just fucking impeach him already. Like, you're not impeach, you just remove him from office and put Mike Pence in.
And you think DeVos would do that? You think Carson would do
that? They have no reason not to. This man is completely unqualified, completely unhinged, entirely crazy.
So are they.
But they don't want to work for him. He's a nightmare to work for, right?
True.
They want to work for Mike Pence. And so does Paul Ryan, and so does everyone else. So they're just, we got to get 8 people through. And then
you think that's the plan?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
I think for
optics, they might let it go until he does something truly like
insane.
But they're just waiting. They need 8 people, and they need him to like really lose it, and then it's done. No impeachment necessary.
And then is the Republican Party anything more than a joke at that point? You would hope. I mean, I never underestimate the American public to just get it.
I mean, they wanted Pence all along. It's so obvious to me.
Well, this is a decent segue, I think. A lot of Republican members of Congress have been going home the last couple days to face their constituents at town halls.
Yes.
And the last we think of town halls was a bunch of Democratic Congress people getting yelled at because of ACA, because mm-hmm. all the local right-wing radio had hyped everybody into a frenzy that there's going to be death panels and mm-hmm. socialized medicine and all the things that never happened, of course.
Right.
So now the shoe's on the other foot.
Right.
And ironically, a lot of the anger at the town hall is don't take away the ACA.
No, this is Republican voters to Republican Congress people at their town halls.
Not all Republicans, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are.
We watched Maddow tonight, and there was this woman in Tennessee who was confronting her congressperson, and she was like, look, like, I'm a Republican and I'm a Christian, and here's what I understand about the Affordable Care Act. She's like, it makes everyone have health insurance because healthy people can pull sick people up. Is that right? Right? Mm-hmm. And the congresswoman's like, yes. And she's like, look, I'm a Christian. And the congresswoman's like, oh, me too. And she's like, cool. So, and she's got this accent. I'm not going to try it. But she's like, as a Christian, I believe that that's our duty, is to pull up the sick, the hungry, the poor. Like, our job is to pull those people up. And if you take this law away, you're going to marginalize, like, you're going to cost the sickest people in our society the most money, because they're going to be in this high risk thing with worse care and more money.
Right.
And I'm like, where the fuck were you 8 years ago?
She was just like, she was listening to her local right wing radio
game. And fucking terrible messaging from the Democratic Party. For fuck's sake. This woman gets it. If you had explained it to her in a way that she could understand, not that she's stupid, but explain it to her in a way that's not like, don't worry, we know what's best for you. Explain it to her like in a way that resonates with her. That she can be like, that makes sense to me as a Christian,
or
that makes sense to me as an American, or that makes sense to me as whatever.
I think Obama and the Democrats sort of took the view that this is so dense.
Yeah.
And it is so arcane.
Yeah.
That if we try to give people the details, they'll just get very frustrated with it.
Well, yeah, we completely, no, like, we fail at messaging, and we really failed during Obama.
And this was a huge fail.
Because we really, like, we learned this election that we assumed people were too stupid to understand. So we just said, well, once they have it, they'll love it. We don't need to explain it. And that was a huge failure on our part, because that's not true. And I feel like I should just be like the president of messaging to conservatives. I'm really fucking good at it.
Yeah, you should.
And I know how to talk to them from a place where we can find common ground, and we can say, I don't need to treat you like you're stupid. You're
not stupid. A caveat,
though.
The conservatives that have an open mind and their worldview isn't based on a rigid, gross, racist, sexist paradigm.
Correct.
Some of them
you cannot
reach.
I'm not trying to convert fucking, like, the KKK. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to talk to people like this woman who voted against Obama twice and hated Obamacare, and now is like, oh my God, someone explained it to me and I'm a Christian and it makes total sense.
Right,
and I'm like, I'm so sorry we failed you. Like, that is our fault.
Partially.
It's the Republicans, but that's politics. We failed politically. I would play devil's
advocate and say part of the responsibility is on her to find out what the hell is actually going on. But you're right.
But if we have two people telling you two different things, and one is, don't worry, we know what's best for you, and the other is,
They're going to come kill your grandma,
and also it's like Nazi Germany or communist Russia. Like, you're like, that's way more compelling than, don't worry, we know what's best for you. That sounds kind of like commies. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we played into their narrative with just such grace and ease.
That's a good point.
It was so buyable. It was so believable, because we really thought like, if they don't, it's too complicated and people are busy and they don't need to know, just do it and they'll reap the benefits and then they'll like it. And it's like, no, motherfuckers, explain it in a way that, like, everyone can get on board. Explain it simply and explain it in a way that makes sense to everyone. And we wouldn't be in this position, but we fucked that up. Like, we have to own that. And we have to get fucking better at messaging. And I'm not talking about messaging all lives matter. Fuck those people. I'm talking about messaging your average human.
This is our platform. This is what we want to do. This is how we want to do it. And this is how it benefits you.
Yes, specifically. Like, and we have a problem in our party of shying away from values-based.
Mm-hmm.
Because that has taken on such an evangelical, conservative, Christian sort of
thing. Right. Oh, that's not our term. That's,
right. That's their term. Oh, if we say values, that must mean that we want to kill babies. We want to get rid of abortion. And it's like, all right, stop. Like, when we shy away from terms like family values or morals or stuff like that, we play into this narrative that mm-hmm. we're all moral relativists and we don't have values because we don't have God. And so like nothing is right, nothing yeah. is wrong, and everything's fine. And that's complete bullshit. Like I have a robust set of values that are completely uncompromising, right? Like yeah. I have that. And some of those values are very shared by people on the other side. We just have to find a way to talk about them in a way that doesn't involve ideological issues.
Well, we have a bunch more stuff to try to talk about and little time to do it.
I know. There's so much.
We're going to be talking again on Wednesday.
Yes.
Some of you won't hear that for a few more days.
Well, we can release that one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since we only have about 5 more minutes, do you want to talk about your friend?
I do.
I think that's important.
I do too. So I have a really very, very dear friend who does my hair, but that's not why we're friends. She's amazing and she's a trans woman and she owns her own shop in downtown Denver. We've talked about her on the podcast before, her and her partner, who's a doctor, service trans people in the Denver community doing HRT for the trans community. So I hadn't seen her in a long time, and I went to see her and she did my hair, and she told me that she was moving to New Zealand with her partner. He is a doctor, and so they were able to do that. And I said, well, you know, if it gets too dangerous for you, you should, you know, go earlier. And she said, oh no, it's already dangerous. And I said, what do you mean? And she's told me the story of how her partner goes out of town sometimes because he's a doctor and he travels to different emergency rooms. And when he's out of town, there's this gang of young men who come and chase her down the street and threaten to rape and kill her, call her a faggot, spit on her, threaten her life, they vandalize her shop, and she's literally scared for her life. And she reached out to local law enforcement, and basically they said to her, maybe you shouldn't walk on the street anymore. Take an Uber, and also spit washes off. So she and I talked for a long time and cried for a long time. And, you know, this woman went through the AIDS crisis in New York City and lost 80% of her friends. And she was a club kid and she's done fashion shoots, doing hair and makeup for Vogue magazine. I mean, she's had an incredible life and I've never seen her that terrified. And I've never seen her cry. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. And so I reached out to the Gender Identity Center here in Denver, who connected me with the LGBT liaison officer. And I contacted him. I haven't heard back from him yet. And I've got some other connections if that doesn't work out. But she said to me that a couple weeks after the election, pretty much right after, that a switch was flipped, that suddenly her body became a battleground in a way that it had never been before. People, and they yell at her things like, this is Trump's America, you're not welcome here. They vandalized her shop. It's all windows and Trump was written on it next to some other choice words. And she just said, you know, for the first time I feel terrified for myself and for my life. And I don't feel safe in my own country. And I don't feel like, she's like, I don't want to flee, but you know, you have to consider yourself. So I'm sorry to leave you with that, but,
I think the point is, if you see something, say something. And if you know somebody who's being terrorized like this, do something. And we are taking action in this case.
Yes.
And we're going to protect our friend. And we're going to make sure she is safe and she is protected.
Yes.
And she will be. And if there's people in your life that you can help in this manner or in any other manner but because of what's happening, then please do if you're at all capable.
And if you need resources, please reach out to us. I can connect you with people that can help you help other people or help yourself if that's the case.
That's irreverenttestimony@gmail.com, @irreverentduo on Twitter. You can send us a message or request a private message or what have you, or just send us an email and we will respond.
Yes, absolutely.
So I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
We will be talking to you again soon. So much more to talk about, of course. And stay safe, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved.